Bill 2397.
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. House Bill 2397 is sponsored by Representative Comp. It allows the Public Employees Retirement Board to accept rollover contributions from a retired member solely for the purpose of paying amounts claimed by the board as overpayments or other improperly made payments, and expands the options for a member to repay the PERS system as currently established in statute.
Okay.
Representative Comp.
Representative Comp.
Yes.
And Mr. Shannon, would you like to come on up? Tell us what we're doing here, please.
Well, good afternoon, Chair Schauffler and committee members. I come to you today to basically just introduce a constituent of mine that always has the
and representative for the record. You're going to have
thank
to
you.
Tell us all, remind us who you all are.
Chair Schauffler, my name is Betty Comp, and I represent House District 22, which is Woodburn, Jervis, Brooks, and Northeast Salem. And it is my privilege to come and testify in front of this committee today. I'm here to introduce Al Shannon. Al is a constituent from Brooks. He works for, it's Oregon City, right?
Oregon City.
He works for Oregon City School Districts and is very supportive in thinking ahead about our PERS retirees, about some of the dilemmas they've been facing with the outcomes of the PERS legislation. And with that, I wholeheartedly support the bill that I was going to call him representative. Mr. Shannon is bringing to it for us because he has thought it through and he knows how it's going to be supportive. And so with that, I just hope you have good decisions. And Al's going to answer all your questions.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Shannon, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman Schauffler, and good afternoon, committee members. My name is Al Shannon, and I reside at 7955 Portland Road Northeast in Salem, Oregon. I retired from PERS since the year 2003. House Bill 2397 was drafted to provide PERS retirees another option to repay a financial obligation with the Public Employees Retirement System. That obligation was created when Judge Lipscomb ruled that the PERS Board erred when in the spring of 2000 they awarded a 20% gain on the fixed accounts. That ruling required the PERS Board to reduce the interest credit to 11.11%. The Oregon Supreme Court upheld Judge Lipscomb's decisions in 2005. The difference between the 20% award and the 11.11% litigated amount created a financial obligation for retired PERS members. Also, calculations involving the cost of living adjustments will be considered by PERS in determining the amount of overaward for each retiree. PERS will now allow retirees to pay their obligation in one of two ways. Number one, by actuarially calculating a reduction in the monthly benefit over the life of the member, or secondly, by making a lump sum payment of the total amount. This legislation provides another option for those retirees to use when they repay with lump sum the funds owed back to PERS. Personally, I prefer repaying my obligations with a lump sum. This creates a win-win situation for all concerned parties. PERS gets the cash up front to help rebuild the trust fund at an earlier date, and retirees are then free from the obligation. As I was making plans to repay my obligation, personnel at PERS explained to me that at the current time, there's no provision for me to repay my debt with funds from my individual retirement account or a tax-sheltered annuity account, which is under Section 403B of the Internal Revenue Code. PERS Board believes the legislature must be given the authority to accept fiduciary transfers. This is the reason the House Bill 2397 was drafted. House Bill 2397 resolves this glitch by granting PERS the authority to accept repayment with a fiduciary transfer from either an individual retirement account or a fiduciary transfer from a TSA or 403B account. Mr. Steve Rodman, counsel for PERS, indicated to me that the IRS private letter ruling has been requested to help address the federal law question. This bill, when passed into law, will complement that issue. I discussed the ideas with numerous groups as I wanted to address the concerns of anyone opposed to the idea. However, I have not been able to find anyone opposed. In fact, the ones I've spoken to think it's good public policy. Today I'm asking for your support of the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. And I think you have done your homework, and I think everyone, including the department, is on board. Does anyone have questions on these nice people? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, not a question, a comment. Conflict of interest, possible conflict of interest. My husband fits into this category.
Well, so noted, Representative. Any other questions or comments?
Well, you can't pay a lump sum either.
Well, you can, but not from his rollover IRA.
Okay. Well, it's just a public hearing today, and then we'll let you know when we work it out. It won't be long. And have a good weekend.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to close the public hearing on 2397. I'm going to jump down, and I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2538. And Representative Teresa, explain what it does.
Yes.
And Mr. Representative Boquist is going to come up and talk to us about it.
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2538 is a committee bill on behalf of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association. We first heard this bill on March 12th. It requires the State Landscape Contractors Board to establish a continuing education requirement for landscape contractors of up to 10 hours per year and establishes the type of resources that can be used towards the requirement. Examples include attending classes, industry meetings, or trade shows. It also requires landscape contractors submitting applications to renew licenses expiring on or after January 1st, 2009 to demonstrate compliance with continuing education requirements. And there's an emergency clause effective on passage. There's a minimal fiscal impact, no revenue impact, and I also want to point out to you some additional background information that was distributed to you earlier today from Michael Snyder from the Landscape Contractors Board and Mike Fisher, who is the Executive Director of the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, as well as written testimony from Peter Padilla.
All right, great. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm representing Brian Boquist, represent the 23rd House District. And Mr. Chair and committee members, I appreciate the opportunity, though it's work session, to express my opposition, though the fact that it's work session, I understand it's going to move out. I just wanted to point out in the record several items about the bill. This bill came up last session, when it was involved in the last session, and it didn't go anyplace out of committee. This time, of course, it's come up in the committee. I believe it's going to move it out here to the floor and then over to the Senate. And some of the issues I'm going to raise, I'll address on the Senate side. It is sponsored by the Oregon Landscape Contractors Association, which represents about 18% of the registered landscape contractors in the state of Oregon. There are, according to the Oregon Landscape Contractors Board, their own website, about 2,700 licensed individuals and companies across the state. The association represents about 350 companies and about 650 individuals. As this applies to continuing education for landscape contractors, if you'll note in the program itself, it identifies four areas, A, B, and C of subsection 3, in which contractors, the area in which the contractors board will pull information to do professional development and sustain professional development. The very first one comes from professional associations, and of course that means they would have to join the professional association. In that particular category, you'll note that 2,350 members that have licenses, 2,350 licensees aren't in the association, and they will now have to join the association to get it if they choose that course of action, which does generate $352,000 for the association. The second option they have is to go to universities and colleges. And so I very quickly, and I'm not very literate on this, and I'm not an expert, my husband wasn't a community college president, so I just went through the old layman's learn, and I went to PSU and typed in the PSU and got their webpage, and they don't offer landscape contracting or landscaping classes. And I said, well, God, OSU's a land grant. They got to have it. And, yes, Oregon State does have courses on landscaping. University of Oregon kind of says they used to, but it was kind of unclear. And none of the small school universities in the state of Oregon, except for OIT, bless them down in Klamath Falls, have landscaping classes. I'm assuming, and I did not check, that maybe some of the college community, for the community colleges do have those courses. So that's the second interesting. The third option, of course, is go back to Landscape Contracting Association, which, again, you got to join. And then the fourth one is online forms of educational program. And anytime you develop online courses, that costs money, and I would question whether there's no fiscal impact for that. I think my concern comes back to, and the same with my constituents, is there an issue out there that really needs resolved? And if we determine that there is an issue that requires continuing education, then we need to have mechanisms in place that don't hinder business development and those 2,350 entities that aren't members of the association. And with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate inconveniencing the committee here. And again, I'm just a layman, rookie, freshman in the minority. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And I'm just a labor. I'm just an old hard leg laborer. But I have made it clear to everybody's willing. Listen, I want the rules adopted here to be very broad in interpreting what qualifies for continuing education. I'm looking right at the director of the department here, a contractor, Landscape Contractors Board, when I say that. And I understand your concern, I do. And I just renewed my contractor's license. And the director of that, the head of that contractor's board, said that this will probably be the last time I'll be able to renew it without continuing ed. Now, we got a lot of problems in that area, which actually come from a very small number of contractors, probably because they don't know what they're doing. Now, there are a lot of things, and Representative, this is just so you know, I'm not steamrolling you and don't care about your opinion, because I do care about your opinion, and I hope you know that. But, you know, you got all these water systems, which are relatively new they're decades old, but they're still relatively new. You got check valves, backflow valves, the whole system, lots of chemicals being applied. Grading, draining. I know something about grading because you don't want the water running off the concrete into your customer's basement, which I've seen other people do with their work. There's just a lot going on, but I do appreciate you coming here, and you're never ever inconveniencing us in this committee. Believe, I assure you, it's an honor to have you here. Does any of you have any questions of the good representative?
Again, Mr. Representative Chair, just a comment. Being the wife of a retired college president, I assure you, does not skill you in looking up college courses on any internet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your comments and understand what you're saying. And I, too, just simply share that whatever is done needs to be economically viable for those small businesses that are out there, because the people are out mowing lawns and doing landscape architecture or landscaping work aren't making, in many cases, top livable wages. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Just a second. Okay. I just wanted to share that with you. This is a work session.
No, Mr. Chair, there's no matter.
I will entertain a motion here.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2538 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Holley moves House Bill 2538 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the discussion I've heard here today, and as I have expressed to you in private, I will put on the record, I have very serious concerns about how this requirement improves the public in any way and their ability to be protected, because there's been some training requirement doesn't mean that the training that they got has anything to do with the job that the person in their lawn is doing. They might have gotten a great vetting from Rainbird on Rainbird, but they're applying chemicals on your lawn, not doing Rainbird, and there's nothing in this that says one is connected to the other. I think that Representative Boquist's comments about who's going to benefit from this doesn't point to me as a consumer. I think this is a problem in search of a solution, or a solution in search of a problem here. Excuse me for reversing that. And I am not convinced that this is the right vehicle, because I'm not sure what we're trying to do here, and I therefore am going to oppose the motion to go forward with this, and would hope that maybe we could rethink this in some other way, that if it does not go out of here, or if it goes out of here and goes over to the Senate, that there's a lot more working on what we're trying to do and whether this is going to get us here. And I have no doubt of the sincerity of the proponents of this bill. Don't get me wrong. I just think that there's a universe of people out there trying to do a good job at a place in our society where you can start a small business, and because you work hard and because you try and do something really good for your customer, and you don't have to have the fanciest education in the world, but you could still be really good at this job and build a business around it. And I think this is a step away from that. It's a regulatory step that I don't think this industry is ready for, or at least I'm not ready to impose on this industry. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to spout on, and I will be opposing the bill.
It's my pleasure. Any more discussion, comments, or questions? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
My pleasure.
I've thought long and hard, probably more than I needed to, about this bill, because I share some of Representative Berger's concerns, and I've tried to justify a yes vote, and I've really been struggling with it. I have yet to be convinced of the problem that we're trying to solve here. And so, you know, I don't know what we're accomplishing. You know, we've talked about what the public interest is, and we heard some testimony about water conservation, and I thought, water conservation, that's going to continue to be an issue as the state grows. But when we look at the areas that we're actually talking about allowing education in and what would qualify, well, I think that it's good that it's broad in scope so that it's not so onerous for folks to get those education or to meet those educational requirements. I'm not sure that we're really serving a public interest. Mm-hmm. And I don't, like Representative Berger, I don't doubt the intent of to do good things by the proponents of the bill, but I'm just not really convinced that there is a problem that we are solving with this bill. So,
thank you, Representative. Representative Escobar.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I heard these arguments in my own profession. When I first started in real estate, we didn't have to have any continuing ed. In fact, we fought it like tooth and nail. Why do we need this? We don't need this. Well, today we're required to have 30 hours. 15 of them are elective. 15 of them are mandatory. And the only thing that I can see that it has accomplished, it's made our profession more professional, more educated, and better professionals. I believe in education. I don't care what you do. If you're a licensed in the state of Oregon, you should have some sort of continuing education in order to maintain that license. It doesn't matter whether you're a contractor, a realtor, surveyor, attorney, whatever. We have to continue to educate ourselves. Otherwise, we sink to being mediocre. We're on the cutting edge, actually, in my profession, in the aspect that we learn all the new things that are going on. When I first started, we had a one-page or two-page earnest money agreement. Now we're up to 8 pages. We're up to a documentation that makes your head hurt when you look at it, with all the addendums, with all the disclosures. If we didn't continue to educate these people, how could they possibly fit all these together? And the real loser is the public. So I believe in education, and I shall support this.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up a little bit with this conversation, I serve over on the Consumer Protection Committee, and we have heard a lot in that particular committee about some of the issues around water intrusion into homes. The dirt being piled up too close to the house causing rot, decks that are being installed, and landscapers installed decks, and there's a lot to it. When you start getting into doing things around the house, there's a lot of things that can happen. There's also, when you're using pesticides and fertilizers and chemicals, you can kill a lot of plants if you don't do it properly. And, you know, given I'm very sensitive to the guy that's out there trying to get started mowing a yard, and I would hope that the licenses that are established, that maybe they have a tiered license that somebody can be licensed to do yards without doing decks or something like that. But I think we've left that in the rule for the landscape contractors board to make that decision. I think they have the expertise to decide whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. We do that with a lot of our different agencies, and we have to rely on our agencies to make sure the job gets done correctly. And if it doesn't get done correctly, I'm sure the issue will come back to us. But I think there is a lot of risk to the consumer out there, even in this industry. And I think the education is the right way to go. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm going to have the last word on this.
Can I ask a question?
Then get it in before my last word.
Well, that's why I wanted you to have the last word, Mr. Chair. So, you said something about the board. I was just looking for the language in the bill.
Down a page away.
Does the board establish what the areas of education are to be in?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I can actually answer that question. And then one of the provisions, on the page one, there are examples of the types of courses that can be utilized, such as trade shows, actual classes, industry meetings, that nature.
And Representative, on line 23, the board may adopt rules establishing grounds for obtaining a waiver of landscape contractor continuing education requirements. They can do all kinds of stuff at rule. Matter of fact, I like the when they solve these problems administratively. We don't have to deal with them. That's just a public confession. Mm-hmm. Any other questions, Representative?
No.
Okay, we have spent a lot of time on this bill. I'm for education, too. I don't see how it hurt anybody. My wife went to 4 years of college. She went to St. Mary's Academy downtown, first of all. She went to 4 years of Oregon State for health and education. She got 2 years at Mount Hood with her dental hygiene certificate, practiced dental hygiene for 3 years, came home, went to OHSU for 4 more years and got her dentistry degree. She's one of the most intelligent, highly educated people I've ever met in my life. She loves continuing education. It's helped her greatly in her business. It's helped her provide a far better and superior product to her patients. And this is one of the most intelligent people I've ever met. And she says it's absolutely essential to maintain the quality that industry puts out. 10 hours. And even the opponents of this bill said they're already doing this. So, and I want to just go back to my own personal experience. When I was in the laborers union, I had an old GMC half-ton pickup, and I got a 3-horsepower snapper given to me. Jerry Van Zandt's dad didn't want anymore. He gave it to me. I had a rake, and I went out and started mowing lawns. And I did that on evenings and weekends and when I was laid off. For 1 year, when our daughter was a little girl, I spent the whole year. That's all I did. You know, and I had more work than I could shake a stick at. And there in no way, shape, or form is this in any way deterring anyone from starting from a humble beginning and becoming successful if they're good at what they're doing. That is just, forgive me, Representative, but that is just not a very good argument in my humble opinion. That's why I'm supporting this bill. Kristen, call the roll, please.
No.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
Excuse me.
Aye.
Aye. Very good. I think I'll carry this on the floor. All right. And just for the everyone knows, House Bill 2486 and House Bill 2487 will not be heard today. So if you're waiting for those bills, you can go home and get ready for the duck game. I really want to thank this committee for a very civil conversation in times of when we disagree. I think that's essential and important, and that's what we do here. And I appreciate everyone's opinion.
Representative Berger stuck me with a pen. I don't know about that.
He did not. Where is that pen and I'll stick you now?
All right. Don't have to separate you two. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 197A.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 197A was pre-session filed on behalf the Oregon Employment Department.
No, I just mowed lawn.
It rewrites the Employment Department's authorization for disclosing confidential information to other agencies, allows increased access to aggregate information about industries, and also clarifies in statute that disclosure to the U.S. Attorney's Office can be made in response to a federal grand jury subpoena. There's no fiscal revenue impact, and it passed unanimously both out of the Senate Commerce Committee and the Senate.
Okay. Let's see. All right. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Byerly. I'm the Assistant Director for Unemployment Insurance of the Employment Department. With me today is Graham Slater, our administrator for our research area. I brought Mr. Slater along in case there was questions that I couldn't handle. And as you know from our experience on Monday, that might be likely. Senate Bill 197 is a bill that was frankly urged by legislative counsel, and it was approved by the Employment Department Advisory Council to make more clear the statute relating to the confidentiality of the Employment Department records. That would be in unemployment insurance, employment services, and our labor market information. This bill would help us or make more clear the times we can release information to workforce partners, those that provide training under the Workforce Investment Act. It would clean up and make more clear a term that's been in our statute for years where the director can release information and in accordance with the discharge of duties. Probably Graham and I are going to in existence that know what that term really means, so it's time to clean that up and make it more clear. The current law makes business industry classifications confidential, and this bill would change that for reasons that make a lot of sense with respect to sharing information about industries. What this bill does is, again, is it organizes the law in a fashion that makes it is more, I guess, more orderly and easy to follow, easier to understand in plain terms. It brings in all the exclusions from reasons we cannot share information. It brings in exceptions, I should say. It has all the state agencies in it lined up and all the federal agencies under which we could share information with. Last October, the U.S. Department of Labor issued new federal confidentiality regulations that are based on the Privacy Act and the Social Security Act. This bill would also bring us in alignment with those regulations. Actually, I think I will turn it over to Mr. Slater to talk about the economic information that we could share under this bill, if that's okay.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Graham Slater, the Administrator of the Workforce and Economic Research Division at the Employment Department. We're the ones that do all the things like unemployment rates and occupational trends and career information. So that's our interest, is this workforce information aspect. And the three things that we're looking for here is, one, to be able to treat local government data exactly the same way that we've always treated state government and federal government information. Local has always been a kind of a gray area, not really one way or the other, confidential or not in the statute, so we've always veered towards we better treat it as confidential just in case, and we'd like to clarify that. A second one has to do with the industry code of a company. Is McDonald's a restaurant? Yes. But can I tell you that officially? No. Because industry classifications are kind of a gray area, and we've always been cautious, and we would like to clarify that it's okay to say McDonald's is a restaurant when we're giving presentations and so on. And then the third one is actually relatively new, and that's our ability to produce maps with a geographic information system. And again, nothing in the current statute really talks about that, and all we want to do is to be able to publish maps that show dots on a map and say, here's where the companies are, here's where the construction firms are, here's where the hospitals are. But a cautious interpretation of the current statute says, well, we're not sure about this, so we're not doing it right now. We wanted to bring it here and say we'd like a clear statement that that's okay. Thank you.
Any questions of these gentlemen? Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, you know I was asking some questions about the disclosure of some of these records just amongst state agencies, and so I'm just following up with that. Is there any information that can, or maybe I should put that a different way, is there any information that cannot be disclosed to other state agencies, employment records as such, for employers or employees, for those other agencies to do their jobs?
I can't think of anything immediately. We have exceptions in the law in this bill that provides which agencies we can share information with, and it is strictly for the administration of their portion of Oregon law. And once we deliver that information to them or give that information to them, they can only use it for the administration of their law, and they cannot share with anybody else or redisclose it. So we're quite zealous in keeping our information confidential. So anytime a state agency asks for information, and oh, by the way, I should add, we also, before we do that, we enter into what are referred to as interagency agreements, where the agency heads will sign the agreement. Basically, it has sort of a statement of work that explains what we will give and how we will give it and how the information will be treated once they have it and won't be re-released.
Follow up, Mr.
Chair? Yes, sir.
So can you tell me what agencies, or I mean, is the list really long, of what agencies you cannot share information with? Or is it, would it be shorter to ask what agencies you can share information with?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Hovey, that's a great question. Graham, can you think of any agencies we can share with?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hovey, I guess my answer to that would be we can share with any government agency for five specific purposes: planning, performance measurement, socioeconomic analysis, policy analysis, and program analysis. And we actually expanded that from just planning to that broader group two sessions back. So we can share with any local, federal, or state agency for those purposes. And then in the current statute, and we're not changing any of this, there's a list of other agencies that for a very particular purpose, economic development comes to mind, that's specifically for a part of their law that has to do with performance measurement. And they came and said, look, we need this information for that, and we're not in the statute. So we came here and said, can they have it? And you folks said yes. There's a list of those, the Scholarship Commission, the Fire Marshal's Office. Pretty much when an agency has seen a need that they really need to get access, it's either under those five planning performance measurement group, or they come and get a specific exception. So I'm not aware of anyone right now that needs our information that isn't getting it because they get it through one of those things already in the statute.
One more quick follow-up, please. I guess what I'm looking for then is if an agency needed the employment information to ensure the accuracy of that information when it comes to ensuring compliance with other statutes, that would be available to them?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Holby, that is correct. In fact, I just counted the agencies in the bill. There are 10 agencies what we specifically would share information with. One that comes to mind would be like workers' comp, if they want to test someone's ability to work. They would look at our records and say, they're telling us they can't work, but yet they're working somewhere.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Berger.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Gentlemen, I'm always a little frightened when a bill that the explanation says clean up and simplify language, and I look at a bill like this because it doesn't look simple to me at all. So I guess, and I've had the experience, I've lived long enough to have the experience where a simple bill comes by and then there's a big fatal flaw in it and all of a sudden something comes to a screeching halt because we've written a law that isn't. So tell me a little bit about who wrote this and who's looked at it. There aren't a lot of people in the room, but it could make something come crashing down if it isn't written very well. And I don't have enough expertise to tell you this is written that well. So tell me about who's looked at this and who's pored over this and who's going to tell me, yes, it does simplify and clarify, and no, there's no big time bomb ticking away in this language that, frankly, I don't feel qualified to, you know, usually simple and clarifying, I can see simple and clarifying, it doesn't look like it to me.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, I can understand, especially when you look at the number of pages, I guess it's like, what, 8 pages long?
Yeah.
7 pages long?
Yeah.
The law is extremely complicated, not complicated, that's not a really good word, confusing, because it's been around for many, many, many years, and over the years, as new state agencies have come to you, the legislature, and said, well, we need these records for this purpose, it got plugged in. this gets plugged in, that got plugged in. So what we're trying to do is take current language and make it all read the same. Whenever there's an exception for a state agency, sometimes it didn't read exactly the same as the exception for the agency right above it. So this is cleaning up that language, so every state agency has their own exception and it reads the same. It also takes language from the release, our ability to release to federal agencies, and pulls it in here so you don't have to go to two or three statutes to get to the basic ability to release information. The main impetus, frankly, for rewriting this bill is from Ledge Council, rewriting this law is from Legislative Council, because when our good friend Doug McKean would look at the law whenever there was an amendment, he kept saying, "Tom, we got to fix this thing, man. It's not very straight and easy to follow." So what we've highlighted, Graham and I have highlighted, are the minor changes or clarifications that allow us to do business more effectively. But for the most part, the intent of the current statute is not changing at all. And we will continue to zealously protect the confidentiality of our records.
And I thank you, Mr. Bauer. I just want to remind the committee or let you know that we're not going to work this today. It is a lot here. I'm not in any hurry on this. And I that doesn't mean we have to quit asking questions today. But I will ask Mr. Byerly and the department and any other experts you can bring along to go to everyone on the committee, make sure they're comfortable. I know I'm making work for you, but I want them to feel comfortable at this, even though it passed unanimous in the Senate, but that could just be because the senators didn't know what's going on in here and they just wanted to yard it out. But that's probably not true. But it is complex, and I want to make damn sure it's right. So any further questions on this? All right, would you do that then, too? I want all these folks to feel comfortable before we vote it out.
Appointments later, if that's
and just for the record, I love everyone in the Senate with all my heart. I'm confident they would never vote anything out that wasn't thoroughly vetted.
You do realize they're monitoring this broadcast.
I know. God bless every one of them.
They're all there.
I'm going to close.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir, very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 197A. And
we're waiting for this bill.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 2218.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2218 was pre-session filed by the Department of Consumer and Business Services and the Office of Regulatory Streamlining. We had a first hearing on this measure on January 26th. It eliminates three functions that are currently administered by the Workers' Compensation Division, and it also enables the director of DCBS to more efficiently address managed care organization performance issues. You have in front of you a -1 amendment from the division and restores bracketed material and deletes both face language in line 2, page 23 of the measure, which deals with the managed care organization portion of the bill. And there's no impact on the amendment or the measure.
Actually, I'm going to close the public hearing on 2218 and open a work session on House Bill 2218. Is there discussion?
Oh, Mr. Chair, we also have John Schultz from the Workers' Comp Division if the committee has any questions about the
Great. Does anybody have any questions of the department or the division here?
Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Holby.
I was just curious. I'm just trying to catch up on what the -1 amendment actually does.
Why don't you come on up and tell us what we're doing here before we do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm John Schultz, the Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, which is part of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Mr. Chair and Vice Chair Holby, the amendment removes the boldface material on page 23, line 22, which referred to managed care organizations in the first paragraph of Section 9. There was concern expressed by the managed care organizations that by referencing them in that paragraph, that when they perform their own dispute resolution process inside of the managed care organization itself, that if later through dispute resolution through the department, we found them to have made an error, that they would be potentially hit with a civil penalty when they really hadn't done anything other than just come to a different conclusion. So by just leaving the notation of managed care organization in the second paragraph, it basically shrinks the number of ways that they would be eligible for a civil penalty to what we really were concerned with, which is failure to comply with the statute, rules, or orders of the director. I hope that answered your question.
Okay, then I assume that the or and the who is back in on line 22 on...
Mr. Chair and Mr. Vice Chair, that's correct.
Any more questions or comments or concerns? Okay, thank you very much. Well, I entertain a motion on this. Representative Escobar.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the dash one amendments to 2218.
Representative Escobar moves we adopt the amendments, dash one amendment into 2218. Discussion? Okay. Objection? So ruled. Representative?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move that we take 2218 with the adopted amendments and recommend it to send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves we send House Bill 2218 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
As amended.
Yes. As amended. Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Escobar.
Aye.
Mr. Holby.
Aye.
Excused.
Aye.
Aye. Does anybody want to
carry
some? Yeah, go ahead. Thank you, Representative. I'm going to close the work session of House Bill 2218 and open a work session of House Bill 2244.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2244 was pre-session filed on behalf of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. We had heard the first hearing on February the 12th. The measure eliminates a sunset of provisions related to permanent partial disability awards and workers' compensation claims. You have a dash four amendment in front of you, which has been approved by MLAC. It outlines how the sunset is eliminated, and the outline was discussed at the first hearing. The only addition from the previous amendment you saw was that there's a new provision which directs MLAC to biannually review the standards for evaluation of permanent disability as currently established in statute, as well as review permanent partial disability benefit payment amounts, and it establishes the measure's provisions to apply to injuries occurring on and after January 1st, 2008, and there's no impact on the amendment.
All right. Any comments, questions, concerns? This one I remember. This one.
This is where you only got 47% for a knee or arm or leg or
but something. I have faith in the management labor advisor.
Yes, so Mr. Chair, I should also point out that the original measure was approved by MLAC. Everything is approved, so on this stuff.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Holby.
I move that we adopt the dash four amendments to House Bill 2244.
Representative Holby moves we adopt the amendment, dash four amendment to House Bill 2244.
The dash four amendment?
Mm-hmm. Dash four, yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Do you have it?
No. Oh, it is. It is.
Out with the packet today.
Yes, I do. Thank you.
Any discussion? Any questions? Objection? All right. So moved. Representative?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2244 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Holby moves House Bill 2244 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Kristen, please.
Representative
Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Holby. Aye.
Excuse me.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone want to volunteer to carry this? Representative Rosenbaum, thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2244 and open the work session on Senate Bill 196.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 196 was pre-session filed on behalf of the Employment Department. We had a hearing on this measure on March 19th. This is the measure we heard that extends the disqualification period for an individual who fraudulently received unemployment insurance benefits from 26 to 52 weeks. It allows the department to impose a penalty of 15% of the amount of benefits that were received through fraud and provides a collection for penalties.
Any discussion?
We have the department here for some questions.
196.
We had a lengthy hearing on this.
Yeah, I like this bill.
Did everyone get contacted by the department and talk with about this?
Yeah.
Yep.
Great. Whenever you all are ready, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger.
I move Senate Bill 196 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves Senate Bill 196 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Very good. Kristen?
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
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 Excuse.
Aye.
Aye. Would anyone like to carry this bill on the floor?
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Berger. I'm going to close work session on Senate Bill 196. And anything for the good of the order? And just for the record, while the cameras are running, I was never a licensed landscaper. All I did was mow lawns and trim shrubs and edge lawns and clean gutters.
And maybe you're gonna have to
just for the record. But I had more work to do than you can shake a stick at. Before I get in more trouble with my friend from Salem.
Oh, nothing. I'm just going to say go Ducks.
Okay. Well, very good. I stand adjourned.